Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, a podcast for students by students, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
I think some of the best ideas come in unexpected ways. So, you know, reading something we're not familiar with reading, looking for the unusual experience, talking to new people, you know, just going out and living our lives in a really authentic and curious way.
Hello and welcome to Measuring Success Right. My name is Grant Frazier, co-host of the show and host of this week's episode. So today's episode is with Professor Shelley Spotts, who is a professor of writing, English, dance, and university writing at BYU. Her research interests include experiential learning, embodied rhetoric, visual rhetoric, and the history and theory of the essay. Before becoming a professor, Spotts received her MFA in creative nonfiction at BYU. I've been lucky enough to take a class from Professor Spotts before, and in today's episode, we talk about her method of experiential learning, about what the creative nonfiction essay is, and how we should all incorporate writing into our own lives. She also has some really great advice about how we can all just be more creative in our day-to-day lives, because it's something that's really hard to do, but as she will explain, it's something that's really therapeutic and ultimately for our benefit. So without further ado, enjoy the episode. Professor Spotts, welcome to Measuring Success Right. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I'm so thankful to be able to be here.
Well, we are so happy to have you. So I just kind of want to jump right in. So you graduated from BYU with a Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Nonfiction, and some of our business school audience might not be familiar with what that is. So could you just give like a basic high level of what creative nonfiction writing is to anyone who might not be familiar with it?
Right. I think nonfiction, especially creative nonfiction, is the genre that most people either misinterpret what it is or underestimate what it is. It really is our most flexible genre of writing. And most people read a lot of creative nonfiction. They just don't realize it. When we say nonfiction, people tend to think very didactic, boring type of writing, like textbooks and rules and lists and explanatory things, sort of along the lines of technical writing. But nonfiction is more essay. It's more personal experience. It's more looking at life and thinking about the philosophical ramifications of it. A lot of people, a lot of the writing that people share over social media, articles from The New Yorker, things like that, that is creative nonfiction. So most people have read a lot of it, although they don't realize that that's what it is.
Interesting. Okay. So what is it about this genre that you like more than other genres? Or like, what is it that drew you to focus on this as your primary focus?
I write in all of the genres. I write poetry, I write fiction. But I think nonfiction for me was the place where I really, as a student especially, found my voice. And I remember taking a class as I was getting ready to go into my master's program. And it was my senior capstone class, which I took because the class I took was autobiography. And I took it because I liked the professor. And it was one of the only ones being offered the semester I needed to take it, right? So we make those kinds of decisions. We're like, well, no, it's the only class available, I'm going to take it.
So it worked.
And I got into that class, and it really, although it said it was autobiography, really focused on personal writing, which is what autobiography is. But we tend to think of autobiography as being, I am telling the story of my life, right? In really concrete terms. But it was not that. And it surprised me. It was, I'm noticing the small and ordinary things, the quotidian, the beautiful moments in my life. And I'm going to meditate on those. I'm going to reflect, and I'm going to try and find a larger meaning to them. And for me, that was a beautiful style of writing, number one. And number two, it put a focus on the author being in the writing that I had never experienced as an author. Because when you write fiction, you're writing characters that exist within the writing. When you write nonfiction, your voice as an author is very present. And you have the ability to be really meta and be really flexible and say, look, I know these reflections might mean something to me and they might not mean something to you, but let me tell you what they mean and let's see if we can find a place of common ground together. And for me, I love that flexibility of being able to just be really concrete and in the writing.
And I've had the chance to do some creative nonfiction writing myself. And I think what I have found really interesting about it and what I've loved about the process is it feels like, it does feel something like something that's very therapeutic for me, kind of cathartic. And it's like, I write it when I feel sad or when I'm feeling like particularly happy or just feeling a lot of emotions. And it's like exactly what you said, where it feels as though it's just me kind of letting everything out for somebody else to read and to just understand the experience I have. It's kind of like artful journaling. Do you think that's like a fair way to describe it a little bit?
I think a lot of times it is. And there's a reason why journaling is used in therapy as a way to process emotion, right? It's a very authentic way to look at what's going on in your life and say, listen, this is where I am. This is where I had hoped to be. Let's look at the differences between these two places. It's a really honest way to process emotions and say, you know, let me tell you how I'm feeling about this. That being said, not all nonfiction has to be that personally based. I've read a lot of great nonfiction that is telling other people's stories, or that isn't telling maybe a person's story so much as like the story of a movement. We see a lot of that type of writing within social justice organizations where we're looking at what is going on authentically. For me, nonfiction also has this ability to bring in like really pertinent issues that are happening and look at how they affect us and see where we can make sense of them and where we can process them, where we can find, you know, again, that common ground between us and someone else's experience.
Okay, so we've talked about some of the different types of ways that you can engage with creative nonfiction. And I guess I'm wondering a little bit, for my own selfish reasons, how you choose what topics you want to address in your writing, or how you kind of approach an idea or take an idea in your head and kind of turn it into something more than that. Like, what's your creative process there? Is that too big a question?
No, I think it's a really relevant question, especially for someone who's maybe looking at things as a writer, but also for anyone else. I don't always know what I'm going to write when I sit down to start it. Mm-hmm. And I am sure I drive my editor crazy. I write a column. I write a column for a nonprofit group. And I always have a monthly like topic to be writing on. But how I'm going to approach that topic is always a little bit of a mystery. So I think one of the things that we have to do is be open to the things that are happening around us and be open to looking for how those things connect, right? Mm. We have to be looking at the threads of our lives and how they interweave and how they touch one another and see how we can pull a deeper meaning from the things that are happening around us. Number one. Number two, I think we have to be just insatiably curious about what's going on around us and slow down, because a lot of times we don't notice the things that are possibilities to talk about, to write about, to create about, because we are too busy with just the day-to-day living. We're too busy like with the busyness to slow down and do the living parts. And really like that ability to slow down and to enjoy the moment, that's integral to finding those connections, to looking for topics, to finding interesting, diversions into other areas of focus. I think some of the best ideas come in unexpected ways. So, you know, reading something we're not familiar with reading, looking for the unusual experience, talking to new people, you know, just going out and living our lives in a really authentic and curious way.
That's really interesting to me, because I am, you know, I used to be an English major and I took your creative writing class while I was an English major, but now I am in the entrepreneurship program, and some of those aspects feel like they carry over a little bit, because a lot of this major is like the process of trying to come up with new ideas and create new products. And it's different for sure. I don't think it's necessarily exactly the same thing, but I think that like when I've had, in so far as I have had ideas in this program of concepts of businesses or like social ventures that I wanted to pursue, they have come in those moments when I am giving myself more time, you know, like the shower thoughts or the thoughts that I have when I go out on a walk. And I think in the business school, there's often a culture of kind of this high intensity, like go, 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 trying to get internships or trying to take as many classes as you can and strategize. But the moments where you can kind of quiet your brain down and give it the time to not be so busy, I think, are the moments where you really do find that inspiration. And it's just really interesting to see that kind of across mediums and across majors and across focuses or studies.
Right. I think creativity in general is one of the most important things we can learn to cultivate. Mm. When you look at most of the developments that have happened, like in technology and science, those disciplines that we tend to see them as really hard skill-based disciplines, less creative disciplines, but the developments that are coming, they've come because people imagined that something could be done, right? Someone had the creative insight to look at specific needs, to develop an out-of-the-box, new, innovative way to address the problem. They looked at how other disciplines were addressing other problems, right? They weren't closed in to doing things only the exact same way. I think sometimes when we can't find solutions to questions or problems that we're having, it's not so much a failure of the ability to find an answer, it's a failure of imagination. Mm. And so, like, developing that creative, questioning, insightful way of looking at the world is going to help you no matter what discipline you are studying. So, yeah, I think there's a lot you can learn from developing a creative mindset. Mm.
And that's something that I have really had to learn, or that I think I've rediscovered a bit, is that you can't like brute force your way to creativity. You know, I try sometimes. I'll sit down and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try and think of like a million different ideas that might be successful or ones that I might like. And it just doesn't work that way. You know, it's like, you can't just force yourself to come up with something in that moment. You have to experience.
I think that's true. I think we have to get out of our own heads a little bit. Mm. We have to live life and go out and do things that are going to spur ideas. I remember being in my graduate program, and there were sort of two tracks in the English master's program. There were the masters in English, which were taking like literature classes and theory classes. And then there were the creative writers who were taking creative writing seminars, right? So they're writing. And I loved to take the literature classes and the theory classes. And I took the writing classes as well. But I knew a lot of writers who saw those other classes as sort of being something that was a bother to do. They're like, oh no, I have to take a literature class instead of writing my great, you know, American novel. And I had more great ideas for things that I was going to write while I was in those literature or theory classes, while I was really interacting with other people's ideas, while I was looking at how other people had addressed these same issues, and sort of getting to that point where you're engaging in a conversation. That, I think, is where great ideas come from. We're borrowing other ideas from other people. We're looking at what has happened. We're remixing. There's, you know, this idea of like remixing in music. And I think mm-hmm. that happens in ideas as well. So the more we are exposed to, and the more ideas that we seek and look for, the more creative we're going to be. But I do think that we can curate a creative mindset, so that in those moments where we're like, no, I need to come up with ideas right now, we have taught our brains and taught our bodies how to find that space of creativity, because we've given it what it needs. And those spaces come as we learn what are the spaces that we're most creative in? You know, are there physical spaces that you feel creative in? Are there times of day that you feel more creative than other times of day? Are there things that you listen to or things that you prep your brain with that make you feel more creative? Are there conversations that you have with other people that afterwards you feel more creative? And then you start to seek those things out and you find this sort of space where you know exactly what to do to put yourself in that creative mindset. And so instead of waiting for some muse to strike you and thinking, well, someday this great idea is going to come and it's going to hit my brain and I'm going to be a genius, we've actually found the way to like trigger creativity in our own brain. Mm.
I think that's something I want to talk a little bit more about experiential learning and some of the things that I got to do in your class. But I think that's something that's very true, both on the finding ways to you know, get into that creative space, because I definitely used to have that problem that many writers do, where you think like you, every once in a while you'll have this burst of creativity and you can write something amazing, but you have to just wait for that burst. And so it's like once every week or once every 2 months or something, you can write something amazing, but you can't just like do it on demand. So I'd love to, that's very good to think about all the different ways that you can kind of get yourself to a place where you can make that happen more often and more naturally. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about like the, or I also wanted to agree with the collaboration aspect, or the like taking from different sources. And as a writer, I think it's so easy to like not want to ever share your writing with somebody when you're like first starting out. It's like so scary and you think other people are going to judge it, but you never write a good first draft, and you only write well once somebody can like give you ideas, I think. Or I think it's much easier to write well once somebody has given you good feedback or gives you different ideas that you can throw in and reincorporate and kind of reimagine the thing that you're thinking about.
Well, so let's talk about like this idea of sharing what you're doing, what you've written. If you're not writing and you're just looking for creative ideas, sharing our ideas, it's a really vulnerable space, right? And so it is scary to do. And for new writers, especially, like, yeah, you don't want to share your writing with anyone. When you're coming up with ideas for a project, sharing those ideas is scary because there's this fear that they're not going to be good enough or someone's going to judge you. And we are like really inherently linked to our creativity. And so the idea that someone's going to judge something that we have created, that we have produced, it feels like a judgment on us. Right. And so we tend to shy away from those. However, if we can overcome that initial feeling of being exposed or of being super vulnerable, it is one of the most creative places and spaces that you can put yourself in, is this space of collaboration. This is why, like, you think of 18th century Paris, which you probably don't, but my brain works like that. So I think of that. And they had like the salons where people would gather, artists and musicians and philosophers, and they would gather and they would share ideas. And a lot of great thought and a lot of great writing came out of those spaces of sharing and collaborating. And I think that happens now. I think writers have an advantage where they're sort of expected to share their writing and create writing groups and workshop what they've done. But if you can find people that you trust to give you honest feedback on your ideas, on your thoughts, on your projects, being in that space of collaboration is one of the most creative places you can put yourself in. But it is scary.
Yeah, it definitely can be scary. It feels like, you know, opening yourself up to a lot of judgment. It feels like an extension of yourself, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you're really authentically creating. Those ideas, when you're being super authentic to who you are and your voice, those ideas are so close to your like integral core self that it's super vulnerable to share them, but also really, really productive to share them. So yeah, I think you have to trust the people that you're sharing with. You have to know who you're talking to and what kind of response that you're going to get. As far as like, is it going to be nurturing? Is it going to be productive? You don't want to share with people who are just going to criticize.
Nothing hurts more than that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
in my writing homework right now, but instead I'm with my family and enjoying this thing. And I'm like, I don't know that anything could be a more productive way of procrastinating your homework, right? Because at least you are living life and giving yourself things to write about. So as a writer, I think it's really, really important to get out into the world, to see what's going on, to listen to people, to eavesdrop. I love eavesdropping. To, again, just really explore yourself, to, you know, just really, again, engage really authentically with what's happening. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of different types of experiential learning. One of my favorite writing experiential programs is an outdoor experiential learning program where you go out and you hike or walk or you know, trek, do something that's like physically active, and then take time to meditate on it and write about it. And I think that works in a couple of different ways. You're giving yourself some really concrete experiences to write about, but also there's this really strong link between physical activity and creativity and getting out into nature and getting outside of like the four walls of the classroom or your house, and really seeing things literally in a different light. And I think that that can be really, really productive. So yeah, my classes, we do a lot of writing in class. We do a lot of little field trips. We, you know, hike across campus and try and find interesting and unusual things to write about. I send them out into the hallways to find words and sentences off of people's posters to bring back to class. And then we create poetry with them. And I think just like the combination of really interacting and getting ourselves physically moving and getting outside of sort of what we see as the learning environment, which are these four blank walls, is a really productive way to incorporate all of the things we're learning about in a really concrete experience.
That's so interesting to me, because I think I have always had the idea of like the genius artist, or maybe the tortured artist or something, as somebody who can lock themselves into a room and write like this incredible novel in like a month or something without any contact with other people. But it seems like that's not really your philosophy or the way that you think the best writing usually comes out, huh?
Yeah, I don't think the best creative ideas come from solitude. I think there's a time for that. I think when you're trying to be really productive as far as getting the words on the page, maybe you do have to like spend that time, get them down. You know, that's the intense work stage of it. But when it comes to creating the ideas, to coming up with interesting solutions, to those happen more organically, and it happens more in conversation, and it happens more as we interact with the world around us. So we do, I think it's important to find connections to get out of this mindset of being like the isolated artist, no matter what we're doing, right? I think no matter what your endeavor is, it's going to be improved by connecting with other people.
Absolutely. And I love that. I think that's a more fun way to do it too. So I'd prefer to do that to be creative, to get to talk to other people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So another thing I wanted to talk to you about, since this is kind of a business school podcast, is I guess, how can students who are outside of these creative programs or these humanities focused majors, how do you think that we can find ways to incorporate creativity into our lives more? Like, I mean, do you think we should try writing? Like, what are ways that you think we could pursue more things creatively and kind of develop a more holistic sense of self?
I think there's a couple of things. I think everyone would be benefited by sort of a more conscious effort to write in their lives. I don't really care if you're going to be a writer or not, but the ability to sit down and really persuasively put your opinions and your experiences on paper is important. Number one, I think it can help us emotionally and just sort of for our own well-being and discovery of self. But number two, you think about anyone who has made it in any discipline, right? Whether it's a scientist, whether it's a musician, whether it's, whatever someone is doing, the change between being able to like really do your thing and then have other people know about it is the ability to communicate effectively, right? Mm. And so there are a lot of people who do a lot of great work that no one ever knows about. But the people that we really, really are familiar with, they're really effective communicators. They know how to write about the thing that they're doing. They know how to translate their own inherent knowledge of this really narrow thing that they spend their life doing. They know how to translate that for a larger audience and say, hey, look, this is what I do. Let me tell you about it. Let me tell you the story about how it came to be. And that gets people involved. And whether you're going to be looking for investors or whether you're going to be looking for clients or consumers, no matter what you're doing, you want to get other people involved in what you do. So yeah, the ability to really communicate your ideas, I think, is really important.
Absolutely. And I think something that it can be sometimes overlooked is that storytelling is one of the most important things you can do in business. You know, like one of the most important things is to tell people who you are, what you do, and why you do it, and to explain that in a way that makes sense and isn't full of business jargon, I think usually is what you want. So I love that.
Yeah. I think like I look at, I've done a couple of branding workshops with businesses, and that's all it is. Like, learning to brand well is learning to tell your story. It's learning how to communicate the idea and the essence of who and what you are and what you're trying to do to this wide audience of people and get them emotionally invested in it so that they're going to pay attention to you, so that they're going to invest, so they're going to buy from you. You know, no matter what those are, it all comes from telling your story.
Absolutely. And I think that that is a great place for us to leave off today before we get to our final question that we always ask on Measuring Success, Right? Which is, how do you personally measure success in your life? Like, how do you measure how well you're doing or how you are following the things that you want to do? Just how does Professor Spots measure success in her life?
I think measuring success comes more from an internal sense that you're doing what makes you happy, both creatively and in your personal life. Are you making the time, aside from your endeavors professionally, to really experience your life? Because at the end of the day, no matter what you're doing, no matter what work you're dedicating yourself to, life is the point, and living your life is the point. And so if you're spending all of your time on other things because you're eventually going to provide yourself a good life, but you're not spending the time to make connections, to make, relationships that are strong with other people, if you're not noticing the beautiful moments that are happening around you, then why are you doing what you're doing?
That is an incredible point and a wonderful way for us to end our episode. Professor Spots, thank you so much for coming on today.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much to all of the listeners. We will see you all next week. Thank you.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about Measuring Success Right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review or online at marriottstudentreview.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect official policy or position of Brigham Young University or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.